Getting started with solo RPGs can be a really daunting task. There's so much information out there, and sifting through it can feel like a full-time job. And despite all of it that's out there, it can be very hard to figure out just where to start. Something straightforward that says, do this, then do that. Well, here's the thing. Before you play any solo RPGs, you need to figure out what game you're going to play. And there are different types of solo RPG games out there. Step one is picking the one that's best for you. I put together a little PDF that details different types of solo RPG games and also walks you through the pros and cons of each, so you can decide what you want out of your solo RPG journey. Do you just like running through dungeons, killing monsters, or journaling from your character's point of view? Or do you want an in-depth story and you're really excited to jump on both sides of the screen, being both the player and your own game master? This PDF details all those types of games and more, as well as concrete examples so you know what to buy next. You can get it by going to crumblingkeep.com, crumblingkeep.com/solo. That's crumblingkeep.com/solo. Let's get you playing with yourself. Hi, I'm James, and I once played a necromancer that had a goat hoof instead of a foot. They died because they were tripping on mushrooms and walked into a raging inferno that they thought was their best friend. I'm here to dork out about dungeons and designs on Crumbling Keep's The Dungeon Dork. There's a secret third player in your game. You're not going to see them at the table. They're invisible. Kind of like a greater invisibility spell. But they have a lot of impact on how the game is played. And this player in particular is really why I like random encounters. Who is it? You may ask. Well, I'm being a bit dramatic right now. And if you've read my blogs and emails and everything, you realize this is not really out of character. And I've talked about this secret third player in those places before as well. So maybe you already know where this is going. But if you don't, that secret third player is the rules. Now, why am I phrasing it like this? Why am I calling the rules a player? Let me explain. So, in finger quotes, traditional RPGs, we have a game master and we have players. Those are the two player roles. Because the game master is a player as well, right? But generally, when we say players, excluding the game master, we mean people who are playing characters in the game. So if we just have those two things, we basically have two classes of players playing pretend and a little bit of just chaos. There's nothing to really rein it in or do anything with it all. But the reason I like to think of the rules as that third player type is because I feel so often in so many games, that player type gets ignored. In that the GM tells you what's going on, and it's the players, and again, when I say players moving forward, I'm likely saying players playing player characters. It's the players who have to improvise and figure out what to do with the situation at hand. And while the GM is going to have to improvise a bit based on what the players do, it's not the same. There's this feeling of absolute power. that I think can really break down a lot of games. And if you look on online discourse of why did my game go bad, so often it's a GM with absolute power who has the thought of my game started here, I want to end it there, and that's what's going to happen. But the rules, the dice included, generally offer this sense of randomness. And now, the GM doesn't just have to contend with the players. The GM also, if they're doing their job well, has to contend with those rules as well. A very simple example. If a player in a well-known traditional RPG is fighting a goblin and they roll a dice to see if they hit. Well, let's say they miss. Well, now the GM has to deal with that, the result of those actions, because that's what the rules say. You roll a dice, that goblin is missed. And it doesn't matter how integral to the story that goblin being hit was, now the GM has to deal with the fact that it's missed. But maybe let's look at a little bit of a better example. A GM often is the one who designs the adventures that the players are going to go through. And one point of bad adventure design that I've seen semi-often is there will be some sort of indispensable piece of information or clue or whatever, and it's hidden behind a single dice roll. Let's say that the players need a key to unlock a door, and that's where the goal of the whole quest is, behind this door. And that key is hidden underneath a bunch of weeds. And if the adventure is written in such a way that the only way that they'll see that key is to make a good perception check, well, that's an issue. At that point, you're giving the rules ultimate power. And if they fail that check, you're at a standstill. And what do you do then? So it's always good to provide options. But going back to this whole rules as a player thing, and I think the important thing here is rules as a reason why the GM also has to improvise. Let me tell you about why I like random encounters. And it's very much the same reasoning. If you are playing a game that has random encounters, and you roll one and it comes up, and it doesn't matter if the players are near death, it doesn't matter if they're at full health and the encounter will be meaningless, you bring that encounter up. It's something to deal with. Now, why is that important? Well, for one, there's a sense of fairness there. If the player characters are near death, and the GM decides, and now 30 goblins attack you, well, that kind of sucks. You knew they were close to dying, and you just randomly decide to have those goblins attack now. But at the same token, if that was never a possibility, if death in these games is never a possibility, like death as a loose state, which I've seen very few games that had it, you know, manifested in any other way, well, then what is, finger quotes, winning or success, what is it worth? If you can't fail, why does it matter if you succeed? So if the players are all, well, player characters are all very close to death, and you roll a random encounter, and there's a whole tribe of goblins that come out, I mean, that's the fault of that third player. It's not the GM, it's not the players, it's the rules. And that creates some very interesting situations, and sometimes those situations don't turn out well. But again, it's not death for death's sake. I'm not saying, well, that's the rules, that's how it happens. But that's the rules. That's how it happens. It gives these, like, it creates a sense of tension, right? This could happen at any time. It's not just put into somebody's good judgment. It's not like, well, I know our GM would never kill us, so that won't happen. Or I know our GM is a power-hungry sadist, so obviously that's going to happen. It's somewhere in between that, and it could happen. And I think that's what's really important here, is being able to present that chance of possibility. That's where the tension lays, right? It's in all the things that could happen. And that's another reason why we reject games that railroad, that make us go in a certain direction. Because that's taking the agency away from both the players and the game and leaving it solely with the GM. And we need a split there. We need each group to have their power. The players, or the decisions the players make, have to affect what the GM is doing. What the GM says is happening has to affect what the players are doing. And the outcome that the rules make has to affect both. This seems like a small thing, right? It seems almost common sense. But I think for a lot of people, they don't think about it this way. And there was a time I didn't either. And suddenly, there's just something about that phrasing that stuck with me. The players and I are playing this game. We've agreed, either verbally or not, to play by this game's rule set. I think it's a good idea to respect what those rules bring. Now, this isn't so much an argument to, like, well, should the game master ever hide their rules and lie about what they are to create dramatic tension and yada, yada, yada. I'm not really so much interested in that argument. Insofar as to say, hey, whatever everyone agrees to beforehand, great. And I think if they, because I think that's part of the rules as well. If the players and the GM agree to some sort of stipulation that changes what's in the book, etc. I'm not saying we need to dogmatically follow the rules written down. But I think it's a good idea for everyone to be on the same page and talk about it beforehand and have something to follow. So if you're going to change rules for dramatic purposes, I feel like the player should know that beforehand. I think it's a good idea to get everyone on the same page. And if that's the type of game folks want, great. But I also feel when you pull that curtain back a little bit and you tell the players, like, hey, I'm going to change my dice rolls for dramatic purposes, it kind of breaks something there. It ruins it just a bit. And it's not so much the fact that you're going to do it, it's just that the players know you're going to do it. And suddenly, if I was a player in that situation, I'd be questioning my every victory. I'd be questioning my every defeat. Is this just because the GM thinks it's better? Doesn't matter what my dice roll or what I do? So again, there's the GM. There's all the players with their characters. And there's the rules. And to whatever degree is discussed and decided upon, it's important to just, like, respect the rules as their own little player and just roll with it. Because we're all getting to the table to play the game, to find out what happens together. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you have any questions about anything I talked about here today or on any past episodes of Dungeon Dorks, go to crumblingkeep.com/question and ask away, or just check the link in the show notes.